Okay, this recording is for lecture 26, wherein we will be continuing and hopefully wrapping up the Bode plot review that we started last class. So, as you may recall, we were examining as just a simple case to motivate the analysis here, this single pole response of an RC circuit, wherein we were considering the transfer function from V1 of S to V2 of S. Did so by putting the circuit into the Laplace domain and just taking a simple impedance divider and then rearranging the resulting transfer function into what we call the standard form for a single pole response with a low frequency gain, A of unity, and omega naught of 1 over RC. Then we took this transfer function and we first tried to plot the magnitude. We did so by dividing the plot up into three different areas here. Omega is much less than omega naught, omega much greater than omega naught, and then right at omega is equal to omega naught. So for each of these, we were able to make some simplifying assumptions. When omega was much smaller than omega naught, this quantity here in the parentheses was much smaller than unity. So this whole thing looked like 20 log of the square root of 1, which is 0 dB, and that gave us a low frequency asymptote of just a fixed 0 dB. When omega was much greater than omega naught, then this term in parentheses here dominated the plus 1, and using our identities of logarithms, we were able to find that the asymptote at high frequency looks like a minus 20 dB per decade slope and goes right through 0 dB at omega naught or F naught on these axes. And then by plugging in right at omega is equal to omega naught, we get 20 log of the square root of 2, 20 log of 1 over the square root of 2, and that came out to be minus 3 dB, which gave us our point here. By combining all of these, we were able to get our full curve, which followed the high frequency asymptote and then crossed through our value right at omega naught and then came up and followed the low frequency asymptote. And one thing to note here is one reason we're able to use these kind of three intervals is because we're plotting on these log-log axes, where even though we're a small distance here on my horizontal axis, this is actually a 10x difference in magnitude. So because the axes are scaled logarithmically, even a small distance kind of visually here on the horizontal axis is a very large difference numerically, which means that pretty quickly this approximation omega much greater than omega naught and omega much less than omega naught, these become valid in a graphically very small interval. So we also went through and looked at the phase of this. That was the arctangent of the real and imaginary components of the complex number making up G. Putting these things together, what we had is here's a summary of plotting and what our asymptotes are for a single real pole. So a single real pole looks something like this. We have 1 plus S over omega naught in the denominator. Our magnitude asymptotes, we have 0 low frequency magnitude, and then above our frequency omega naught or F naught, we have this slope of minus 20 dB per decade. In the phase, we showed that there were different ways to approximate this phase curve. The straight line approximation that we'll be using in this class is that we start at 0 degrees of phase, we end at minus 90, and this 90 degrees of phase drop happens linearly between F naught over 10 and 10 F naught. That means that from a decade below our omega naught frequency, we begin dropping off at a rate of minus 45 degrees per decade, cross exactly through minus 45 degrees of phase at F naught, and then end up at a decade above F naught here at minus 90 degrees of phase. Okay, so this will be a basic building block of transfer functions as we move forward. Here's what one pole will look like. In the next few slides, I'll go over some of the other basic building blocks, a real zero, a right half plane zero, and then inverted poles and zeros. And rather than go through and rederive the magnitude and phase of all these, I'm just going to show you slide similar to this one showing the asymptotes for each. So for a real zero, we now have the same kind of expression, 1 plus s over omega naught, but we have it in the numerator rather than the denominator. What that's going to do is now when we take the magnitude, rather than having a minus 20 dB per decade slope from having a negative exponent on our omega, we're going to have a positive exponent on it, and we're going to get plus 20 dB per decade slope, again, beginning at F naught and continuing in high frequency. Similarly, by flipping everything up in the numerator, we're going to get phase lead rather than phase lag, but the basic shape will be the same from a decade above F naught to a decade below F naught. We'll have this plus 45 degrees per decade rise in our phase. And so each pole and zero is going to contribute 90 degrees of phase for a single pole, 90 degrees per pole per zero. And depending on whether it's in the numerator or the denominator, in fact, the polarity of it, we'll get plus or minus 90 degrees of phase. So this is a really a left half plane zero or a minimum phase zero. We can see that because we've got a plus sign right here, which means if we solve for where this is equal to zero, we're going to end up with the omega in the left half plane. If we look at a right half plane zero, which looks like the same thing, but we've just swapped to a negative sign here on our S term, what we're going to see is in the magnitude, that'll have no effect. When we go through and solve the magnitude of this, we're going to square the real and imaginary terms, and that square is going to get rid of any plus or minus signs. So our magnitude here is the same as the left half plane zero. Our phase, however, this negative sign will have an effect. When we take the arctangent and we negate that, now our phase is going to drop more like our original plot of the pole rather than rise as it did in the really left half plane zero. For that reason, you'll sometimes see a right half plane zero called a non-minimum phase zero. Because this is going to give us additional phase lag, which is going to be a difficult thing to work with when we are actually trying to close the loop around these systems. So these right half plane zeros are going to be actually a big problem, something that makes the system more difficult to stabilize and compensate in closed loop. So hopefully all three of these are fairly familiar to you. Poles, zeros, right half plane zero. We won't talk about right half plane poles because those won't show up in our systems as long as we are stable. Something you may not have seen before is the inverted pole and inverted zero. And these are kind of along the lines of this design-oriented analysis, but it's really just another way of writing a combination of a zero and pole, but one that'll be useful for us to write transfer functions in terms of the most important characteristics. So an inverted pole has a transfer function that really looks like our normal pole, where we have replaced our S over omega naught with then omega naught over S, really flipped it upside down here. And what this does is it allows us to express a Bode plot that looks like this in terms of the high frequency gain. So one way to see this is if I multiply this whole transfer function through by S over omega naught, what you'll find is that if I take this g of s, multiply numerator and denominator by s over omega naught, what I will get out of this is s over omega naught times 1 over s over omega naught plus 1. So this, in terms of what we've seen before, looks really like a 0 at DC, followed by a pole at omega naught. And these two expressions really equivalent. I've only multiplied by S over omega naught over S over omega naught, so I've multiplied the whole thing by 1. So these two expressions are the same. The advantage here is when I use this expression, my term out front, my constant out front of this whole thing is 1 over omega naught, which maybe doesn't give me a lot of insight into the system. Here, more generally, my inverted pole would be expressed in terms of the gain at high frequency. So I'd have here my constant out front of this expression for my transfer function is my high frequency gain. So when I use this inverted pole, if I'm trying to look at some plot and write the transfer function for it, these inverted poles allow me to start from high frequency and work my way back, whereas my normal poles and zeros are going to require me to express them in terms of the gain at lower frequency than themselves. Okay. So thinking of this transfer function as a DC 0 plus a pole at omega naught, then our phase here will be plus 90. That's the 90 degrees of phase lead contributed by the 0 back at DC. And then right around omega naught, I'll get the same pole phase lag that drops me from my plus 90 down to 0. So I'll have 90 degrees of phase lag centered around omega naught. Okay. So I can do the same thing with an inverted 0, where I take my normal expression for a 0 and I just flip my S over omega naught term upside down. Again, if I wanted to express this in terms of non-inverted standard form, what I'd get is G of S, and I would want to multiply here by S over omega naught over S over omega naught. This one in the denominator, I will just leave out front. It's going to look like omega naught over S times S over omega naught plus 1. Now I've got a pole at DC and then a 0 at omega naught. By writing this in this inverted standard form, then again, my multiple here is my high frequency gain. In this case, it's 0 dB, which is unity. So this has fallen off. But for example, if my G of S was 20 times 1 plus omega naught over S, and this here would be 20 log of 20, and I would have that directly out front in my transfer function. Whereas if I wrote it in my standard form, omega naught over S times S over omega naught plus 1, what I'd have out in front of this whole thing would be some multiple of omega naught, which I would have to then do more algebra to solve out how to plot this thing. Here with the inverted 0, we again, due to the pole at DC, we're going to get 90 degrees of phase lag, and then due to the 0 at omega naught, we're going to see 90 degrees of phase lead added in to get us back to 0 degrees of overall phase. So these inverted poles and zeros may be new to you. I hope you've seen the other ones. These ones may be a little bit new. We'll work through a couple examples here, and hopefully it'll become a little more clear when you might use these and what the advantage of doing so is. One more thing to cover before working through some examples is how we multiply different transfer functions, which is going to be important when assembling a Bode plot with multiple poles and zeros. The simple way to look at this is if I have some transfer function G1 of S and some transfer function G2 of S, at any given frequency, I can express each of these in polar form. So I'll say G1 of S equal to sum A1 E to the S times theta 1. And I'll say G2 is equal to A2 E to the S times theta 2. And now if I wanted to express some product of them, G1 of S times G2 of S, that's going to be equal to the product A1 E to the S theta 1 times A2 E to the S theta 2. And as I multiply this out, this is going to be A1 A2 E to the S times theta 1 plus theta 2. So what does this mean? If I multiply two transfer functions, the phases will add, magnitudes will multiply, but when I actually put this in DB, based on our logarithmic identities, the log of a product of two signals is the sum of those two signals. So magnitudes multiplying in the linear domain means they will add in log domain. So as I'm plotting here, if I have a transfer function which has multiple poles and zeros, I can write the I can actually draw the transfer function of that by adding the Bode plots of the individual poles and zeros in both the magnitude and phase domain. So as an example, we'll go through and just plot a transfer function that looks like this. Okay, so I've got some DC gain, G naught, that's 40 or 32 dB, and then I have poles at omega 1 and omega 2, expressed in hertz. They're at 100 hertz and 2 kilohertz. Okay, so to plot this, what I can do is actually say this transfer function G of S looks like the product of three different transfer functions. Looks like G naught times a single real pole plus S over omega 1 times another pole 1 plus S over omega 2. Okay, and I can plot the magnitude and phase of each of these three components, G naught, the pole at omega 1, and the pole at omega 2, and then just add up the magnitude and phase of each. So if I were to do that, as far as magnitudes, G naught is 32 dB, which would be something kind of here. So this will be my magnitude of G naught. My pole at omega 1, looking just like the single pole that we solved before, will look like 0 dB at low frequency. It's going to have a breakpoint at 100 hertz. I kind of looked at my 100 hertz here. Then my transfer function is going to kind of come here, and then it's going to drop off at minus 20 dB per decade. If I sketch roughly where that should hit, it should be minus 40 here, minus 60 here. So this is going to drop off at minus 20 dB per decade. So that was my magnitude G naught. Let's call this one G1 of S. We'll call G2 of S the second pole. So this would be my magnitude of G1. G2 is going to be my pole at 2 kilohertz. 2 kilohertz is right here, the first tick above 1 kilohertz. So that's again going to look like 0 dB up to the 2 kilohertz breakpoint. After 2 kilohertz, it's going to fall off at minus 20 dB per decade. That's our magnitude of G2. So then my overall magnitude, my magnitude of G of S, what I'm trying to plot here, is going to be the sum of these three. So to get that, I'll just go through and at every frequency sum up the three of them. So at low frequency, I've got 0 dB plus 0 dB plus 32 dB, which will look like 32 dB. And I'm going to follow that curve all the way out until my first pole. After my first pole, I'm going to continue adding 0 dB from G2, but I'm going to get a minus 20 dB per decade contribution from G1. So my overall magnitude is going to begin dropping off at minus 20 dB per decade. And it's going to continue to do so until I hit the omega 2, or F2, at which point it's going to be getting a minus 20 dB per decade contribution from the first pole, and a minus 20 dB per decade contribution from the second pole. That's going to cause the overall magnitude to begin sloping down at minus 40 dB per decade from this point on. I'll exaggerate it a little bit here. Okay, so that's our overall magnitude. To do the phase, what we're going to do is the exact same thing. I need to plot the three asymptotes of my three components of this transfer function, my G0, my G1, and my G2. So G0 is going to be quite simple. Notice that my phase is over here on the right. The phase of a real number, G0, 40, is always going to be 0 degrees. So G0 is going to be just 0 degrees always. My G1 is a pole at 100 hertz. Based on my straight line approximation, what's going to happen is at 1/10 and 10 times my pole frequency, I'm going to, between those two points, have a minus 40 degrees per decade slope in the phase, minus 45 degrees per decade, excuse me. So if I plot that from my 100 hertz, let me get rid of this, it's a little crooked. So if my 100 hertz is my F1, then 10 hertz would be my F1 over 10. 1 kilohertz would be my F1 over, F1 times 10, or 10 F1. So it's between these points that my phase is going to have this minus 90 degree drop. So above 10 F1, I should see minus 90 degrees. Right at F1, I should be at minus 45. And a decade below F1, I should be at 0 degrees of phase. So it's going to kind of look like this here. So this is my phase of G1. This line here at 0 degrees is my phase of my G0, my just constant multiple out front. And then my phase of G2 is going to be the same thing that I drew for the phase of G1, just shifted over to be centered around a corner frequency of my F2, which was 2 kilohertz. So the phase is going to drop between a F2 over 10 which is 200 hertz, and an F2 times 10, which would be 20 kilohertz. So I'll see my phase contribution from G2 go into a slightly different green to differentiate them. It's going to be 0 degrees at low frequency. And then my first break point, second break point, right at my F2, which is 2 kilohertz, I'll be at minus 45 degrees. And I'm going to slope down here. If I hit this right, I should hit minus 90, right at my 10 times F2. So I'm getting a little bit messy on my plot here, but just one more to draw. Hopefully I can get that in there. So now my overall phase is the sum of these three different components. My phase of G0, my phase of G1, and my phase of G2. So if I sum them up at low frequency, I'm going to have 0 degrees phase from all three. So my overall phase of G is going to be 0 degrees. After this F1 over 10, I'll start to get minus 45 degrees per decade of phase lag from the pole at omega 1. It's going to continue until this point, F2 over 10, at which point I'll be getting minus 45 degrees per decade from F1 and from F2, from both poles. So both kind of be on and contributing phase lag during this interval. So here I'm going to start with minus 90 degrees per decade slope in the phase. And that's going to continue until 10F1, at which point my phase from the first pole dies off. I've got my full 90 degrees contribution, and I'll go back to a minus 45 degrees per decade slope just from the second pole. That'll continue until 10F2, at which point I'll steady out to my high frequency phase, which is minus 180 degrees. Now, when we start adding up these different phase asymptotes, it can be pretty easy to get your slopes a little bit off and end up at a weird number at high frequency. So a good thing to do is double check, does your high frequency phase match what it should be once all of the poles and zeros have contributed the entirety of their phase lead or phase lag? So right now, if I'm plotting something with two poles, these poles are both in the left half plane, both of them are going to contribute eventually 90 degrees of phase lag. So my high frequency phase should be minus 180 degrees. Good. I ended up in the right spot. Here, plotted much more cleanly than what I was able to do by hand, is the straight line asymptotes of this G of S, showing these same characteristics that we drew. We've got this kind of middle interval in the phase, where we have both poles contributing phase lags. We have a minus 90 degrees per decade slope. We end up with a high frequency phase of minus 180 degrees. And at high frequency, we've got minus 40 dB per decade of slope. Didn't mention on the previous slide, but we can do the same thing with our high frequency slope, right? So if we have two poles, then each of those will be contributing a minus 20 dB per decade slope at high frequency. So we expect our overall transfer function to have minus 40 dB per decade of slope at high frequency. Okay, so there's our first example. This is how to plot a transfer function just from your straight line asymptotes. The second example is gonna work this in reverse, similar to some of the things in homework problems. Is trying to figure out what the transfer function is from the straight line Bode plot. Okay, and from the Bode plot shown here for this function A of S, there's kind of two ways that we can go about writing this. One is going to be to use normal poles and zeros, and one is going to be to use these inverted poles and zeros that I showed earlier and mentioned may be useful in some circumstances. So start with the perhaps more familiar way of doing things. We'll just write it in terms of normal poles and zeros. So I can say that A of S looks like I've got some DC low frequency gain, A naught. And then starting from that, I'm starting here now, and I'm going to kind of look as I go up in frequency what happens. Well, I first hit some zero here. I know this is a zero because my magnitude asymptotes, the slope goes up by 20 dB per decade. Now look down at the phase, see that the phase also goes up, starts with phase lead at a slope of plus 45 degrees per decade. That lets me know that this is not a right half plane zero. So I can write this as 1 plus S over omega 1. And then as I continue after the zero, I come up to this point, at which point my slope goes from plus 20 dB per decade down to zero slope. That indicates that this is a pole. So I'm going to write it in the denominator here, 1 plus S over omega 2. I can, of course, again, look down at the phase to see that, well, yes, I do get phase lag from this pole, so it is indeed not a right half plane pole. Good. Okay, so this is one way to write it. This is a correct way to express this transfer function. One issue with this is I've got this A infinity over here, and if I look at this expression and I want to know what is A infinity? Well, I can solve that simply enough. I can't directly read it off of this transfer function, but I could say, okay, let S go to J omega naught, and then let omega go to infinity. Evaluate what happens here. As I do so, well, what's going to happen is the S terms are going to become very large. They're going to dominate the 1 plus terms. And eventually this is going to look like A infinity is A naught times in the numerator. I'll have kind of infinity over omega 1, the denominator infinity over omega 2. I'll let the infinities cancel out, and this limit will evaluate to A naught times omega 2 over omega 1. Okay. So that's fine. Now I've been able to solve A infinity, but there are times where we may want to, this A infinity may be the more important characteristic of our system. So we may want to write a transfer function in terms of A infinity. And we can do algebraic manipulation to do that. The simpler way is to use these inverted poles and zeros. So the really the purpose of these, and the reason, for example, this is called an inverted pole, is I've really inverted the frequency axis here when looking at this pole. So rather than looking left to right on my frequency axis, I'm kind of looking right to left, expressing things in terms of the high frequency, and then having an inverted pole looking back here, which is why I'm able to express this combination of a DC zero and a pole at omega naught just in one term in terms of the high frequency gain. So if I wanted to apply these to my example two here, I could again write this same transfer function, but using inverted poles and zeros. I'll start from A infinity. A of S is equal to A infinity. And as I work my way backwards on the frequency axis, the first thing that I'm going to see is going to be a inverted basically pole here, because as I'm working back, I see the magnitude start to drop. That's a characteristic of a pole. So I'm going to see this inverted pole first at F2. I'm going to have a denominator 1 plus omega 2 over S for my inverted pole. As I continue back, I'm going to see an inverted 0 at F1, 1 plus omega 1 over S. And now I've expressed the same transfer function, but what I have out front is a infinity rather than having a naught out front. And just to verify here, one thing I could do is say, okay, in this expression, let omega go to 0, take the limit. What's going to happen? Well, as I let omega go to 0, these terms, omega 1 over s and omega 2 over s, are going to explode. And then I find that a naught is going to be equal to a infinity. If these terms explode, they trump the 1 plus, and I'll get times omega 1 over omega 2 in this limit. What you'll notice immediately is that this expression, same thing. Okay, so these are both equally valid ways of writing this transfer function. Whether you choose one or the other, completely up to you, but it just depends on really what is the important characteristic of this transfer function that you want to draw out and have be a term in the front of your transfer function, whether you care more about a infinity or more about a naught. That may be a bit obscure to some of you. So just as a quick example here, let's assume that I had a transfer function. I'm looking at the magnitude of, call it g of s. It looks something like, looks something like this versus my frequency axis. Okay. And let's say that it's important to me that this midband gain, I'll call it a mid, be designed to a certain value. And below some frequency F1, I want to have a integrator type characteristic. I want a midband gain between F1 and F2 of a mid, and then I want to attenuate high frequency. So in this situation, it's very advantageous to write our transfer function using both an inverted pole and a standard pole, using both inverted and non-inverting type notation, inverted zero. So I'd like to express my transfer function g of s in terms of this a mid. And if I want to write it in terms of a mid, then I've got kind of a normal pole above this, and I've actually got an inverted zero below it. So I could write this as a mid times, in the denominator, my pole at F1 plus s over, or my pole at F2, excuse me, omega 2. And kind of moving backwards on the frequency axis, I'll have this inverted 0 at F1, so 1 plus omega 1 over s. Okay. So here I was able to write this quite simply just by looking at the plot. Now let's assume I didn't like this inverted 0 concept, so I wanted to write things in terms of normal zeros and poles. What I'd say is that, well, my g of s is, I've got this 0 here at F1, so I can write 1 plus s over omega 1. Got a pole at F2. Now, what do I have out front here? So I've expressed this 0, this pole. Since I've got this, I'll assume it was a minus 20 dB per decade slope at low frequency, I know that I must have some kind of a pole out here at DC. I've got a 1 over S, but I'll still have some gain here. My low frequency gain, when I write things all in terms of normal zeros and poles, but what is A naught? Well, it's, you know, what normally shows up out front here is my DC gain, but because I've got this integrator type characteristic at low frequency, my DC gain is infinity, and regardless of what I put for A naught, it's going to be some type of infinity. So what I really will need to do now is to solve for A naught such that my mid-band gain is where it needs to be, right? So I can do that by plugging in some point on here and evaluating and matching everything up to find A naught. I can do it by plugging in a frequency somewhere in between an F1 and F2 and approximating the contribution of each of the poles using their each pole and zero using its linear asymptotes. So something that I can do, but it'll require a bit more algebra than it took to just say, okay, use an inverted zero and a normal pole. Okay. So the beauty of these inverted zeros, inverted poles, is they let you express transfer functions in terms of higher frequencies than themselves. Okay. So the remaining thing to discuss in our Bode plot review is resonant poles, and how those will show up in our systems. So the most simple way to get resonance, I'm showing here a LCR circuit, looking at the transfer function again, V2 over V1. If you solve this in the Laplace domain and do a bit of manipulation, you'll get into a form that looks like this. And we could say this is some standard second order polynomial with coefficients A1 and A2. But how do we take the Bode diagram of this? One way would be to apply the quadratic formula. Look at where the solutions to the quadratic formula show up. We could use that to actually factor this out into two different poles and then solve directly for the magnitude and phase. That solution is valid, but that's kind of a algebra intensive solution, one that's a bit more complicated than what we'd like to do. So instead, what we're going to do is just use a standard form for complex poles. And we'll analyze this standard form generally, giving us some rules on how to plot complex poles that we can apply whenever they show up. So our standard form for complex poles, one that we use more often in this class, is on the right here, where we express them in terms of the resonant frequency, omega naught, and some quality factor, Q. One used often in other fields is this expression here in terms of our damping factor. We tend to use Q more often. Okay. So there is this general mathematical truth that whenever the coefficients of S are all real and positive, then the parameters here are also real and positive. The way we generally solve for, in our case, omega naught and Q, is by manipulating a transfer function into a standard form, as shown here, and then just setting the coefficients equal to the coefficients of our standard form. So in this case, this would be my 1 over omega naught squared. This would be my 1 over Q omega naught by just coefficient matching between this equation and the one I'm showing here. In general, this quality factor Q, if it is greater than 0.5, that means that the poles in the solution to this denominator here, setting that equal to 0, the poles come out complex. If it's less than 0.5, we'll actually have two real poles. Talk about that more in a few slides here. For the moment, we'll assume Q is greater than 0.5 and look at how the magnitude and phase asymptotes are going to fall out from that. Okay. So relating these two different forms, Q is 1 over 2 times the damping factor. If we want to jump between the two different forms, like I said, we'll use Q more often than not. In terms of actual implication on the real system, Q can be thought of as the ratio between the peak stored energy and the energy dissipated per cycle. What this means is that Q describes the resonance between L and C here. If I, for example, put a step input G1 of S, what I'll get out of this system is some response that rings and eventually dies out to zero. Q is going to define kind of how long this rings for. Q is very high, it's going to continue ringing for a very long time. Q being very high means that the ratio of the energy in that ringing to the amount lost per cycle is very high, so the ringing will continue on for a long time. Very little of the energy is lost each cycle, so that ringing can continue. Q is very low, that means that this ratio is small, that means that much of the energy is lost each cycle, that means that my ringing will die out very quickly. So going through, I won't do the algebra here, I'm just going to quote it from the book, and solving for the magnitude of this resonant double pole, what I get is this expression here, which I can again think of as some asymptote at low frequency, some asymptote at high frequency. Hopefully no surprise, the low frequency asymptote is 0 dB. The high frequency asymptote looks like a minus 40 dB per decade slope. Right around F naught, the behavior is going to be defined by Q. And we can look at the behaviors for different values of Q. In general, for Q much greater than 1/2, then what we're going to get is a bump in the magnitude asymptote, which has a height of the magnitude of Q in dB. Okay. So looking at some various values of Q, so this approximation good for large values of Q, and right at my resonant frequency, if Q is very large, I get a very large spike in the magnitude. Around Q is equal to 1/2, I'm pretty close to my minus 3 dB. I'm pretty close to looking like a pair of real poles. And as Q goes much less than 1/2, this really starts to look like two separate real poles. Okay? The phase, a little bit more complex. It's going to, because this is a kind of a double pole, we're going to see double the phase lags. We're going to get a total of minus 180 degrees of phase lag from this resonant double pole. And as Q becomes higher and higher, this phase lag is going to happen in a smaller and smaller interval around our resonant frequency. For low Q, it really looks like two distinct poles, minus 45 degree dB per decade drop around the first and the second. For very high Q, it's almost just a step drop off of minus 180 degrees in phase. So the basic asymptotes that we'll use for complex poles, for Q greater than 0.5, greater than 1/2, we're going to have is a magnitude asymptote that is 0 dB at low frequency, minus 40 dB per decade at high frequency, and has this bump of Q in dB. For the phase, we'll start at 0 degrees, eventually fall off to minus 180 degrees, and we're going to do so our straight line approximation in between 10 to the minus 1 over 2 Q times F naught and 10 to the plus 1 over 2 Q times F naught. A little bit harder to remember, but pretty valid approximation here. It's a pretty good fit to this behavior. So this is how we'll express our resonant poles when Q is greater than 1/2, when it is really a pair of complex poles. When Q is less than 1/2, it's really going to look more like two distinct poles. It's two real poles, and we'll actually break the denominator apart and figure out where those two poles are. And we will pick up here next class, finish up a couple things related to breaking apart these complex poles into two real poles for our low Q approximation, and then move on to actually solving and plotting transfer functions with converters. So, thanks, and we will see you on Monday.